This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
We were still trying to figure out the movie. I think I was taking a shit one day, and I was reading the autobiography of Gucci Mane on the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a chapter about his grandfather, and I was reading that, and it was like a lightning bolt. I remember running with my pants still down into the bedroom, like, it's the grandfather! The grandfather has to die. and that's kind of what spawned it.
With your pants around your ankles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Howdy-ho, Hot Breath-averse. This is your boy, comedian Joel Byers, and welcome back to the one and only Hot Breath. Yes, you are in the right place. If this is your first time listening, welcome aboard. If this is your 144th time listening, welcome back, my hot brethren and sister. And this is Hot Breath, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. And we have been on a hot roll lately. Our guests have been hashtag lit AF. And today is no exception. We're getting into the movie biz a little bit here, kids. So if you're interested in making your own movie or learning more about the movie biz, or you have made your own movie and would like to learn from people who have also made their own movies, this is the episode for you. Just two episodes ago, we were on here with Bo Burnham and Elsie Fisher talking about their new movie. Now we are on here with Catherine D. Holly and Frey Ford talking about their new movie coming up called Pop Pop is Dead. I'm an absolute fan of this Hollywood power couple. Yeah, I said it. I just said it. But really, this is a masterclass on how to make your own films and do it the right way with quality without having to bust the bank. So this is perfect. Take notes. Definitely you want a pen and pad for this one. There's a lot of good info in here, as per usual with these episodes. So if you do find it informative and enjoy it as much as I did, please do just share it with a friend or family member, or hit us up in the iTunes reviews. That's going to help get more people's eyes and ears onto this podcast, because we're also on YouTube as well. So that'll really go a long way in letting us know the way. So that being said, sorry, I tried to rhyme that right there. I'm a better podcaster than rapper, but those two rhymed, rapper and podcaster. All right. Anyway, let's just get to the Hot Breath episode. I am super excited about this episode leading up to their movie premiere on August 29th at Buckhead Theater. Go check it out. I'll be there in support. I hope to see you there. But now is the time that we inhale a hot breath with Catherine D. Holly.
Yeah.
And Frey.
To keep it. I can't. Gaffney.
Oh, my name's too long. I can't do that.
What's your real name?
Fraser Philip Ford IV.
What's your full name?
Catherine D. Holly.
Catherine D. Holly.
I have a good name.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a. He's like, I don't.
I have a good name.
Nice. We're ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh my gosh, we're ready. We're on officially.
We're doing the thing?
Holy crap.
Okay.
Welcome to Hot Breath. Ladies and gentlemen, Catherine D. Holly.
Yeah.
Fraser.
Philip.
Philip Ford the Fourth.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome.
You got it.
Otherwise,
yeah.
Frey and Cat.
Yeah.
Awesome. Frey and Cat.
Welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks.
No problem. Congratulations on the new movie. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
To talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I watched your new movie and your previous movie right before this, so it's all on top of mind.
Which, as we said earlier, is way too much of us.
Too much us.
To take in at one time.
It was perfect, though. It was cool, because I like your progression that one's almost like 30 minutes, and then this one's like 60 minutes, mm-hmm. and it's just showing the growth.
Yeah.
So the first one, Good Hair. And then this second one, Pop Pop is Dead. Just maybe as an introductory here, what was maybe the big takeaway from Pop Pop is Dead compared to Good Hair?
Compared to? Like, what did we learn?
Yeah.
I think the big takeaway, we had a much bigger crew It was like everything was doubled. So double the budget, double the crew, double the shooting days.
We also did, you know, a lot of firsts for the first time, like a first fight scene, our first stunts, our first special effects with his hand and all that jazz.
I think after Good Hair, we were like, we just want to go bigger.
Oh, okay.
We just want to do everything
with
big.
Good Hair, we wrote something that we knew we could realistically produce. And we did the same with Pop Pop is Dead, but we didn't let things, like, for example, we don't know how to shoot a fight scene. We didn't let that scare us away from writing a fight scene. Yeah. Still
like,
learning
well,
how to shoot
a fight scene.
And you never want to do one again. Is that what
never.
You said?
Yeah. Never.
Kat's very anti-fight scene now.
Yeah. What was wrong with it? Just the choreography of it?
I got injured.
She got injured. She got a concussion.
And you can't really be a director when you're unconscious. Yeah. So, you know, that was that
a
was
point.
A takeaway.
She's
a
good note for filmmakers. Scene. Yeah.
She missed the mat when she fell. And so she hit her head, and then immediately after we shot these scenes of her dancing drunk to flashing lights.
Yeah,
right after, seconds after. And then we did that for like 20 minutes afterwards. She came out, she's like, I'm feeling a little woozy. I'm feeling weird. And I was like, oh, okay. And then she fainted.
It was great.
It was crazy.
How long were you out for?
What, 25 minutes?
Hour.
Okay.
An hour? She doesn't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
She was concussed.
I was concussed.
Yeah.
Because this one was, I mean, that's a tight schedule to keep up. This was like 8 days,
right?
Like 14-hour days.
Yeah, 8 days. You know, I think, most days we would hit about 10 and then.
We would try to do 10 and 12-hour days, mainly because.
Once you're doing fight scenes and party scenes, that's where you get those long.
We had a couple 14-hour days. Yeah.
Yeah, long days. Yeah. Yeah.
So Good Hair was only like 4 days? Is that
Yeah, that was a quick shoot. We shot that like in our apartment and at my job and like at Highland Ballroom up the road. And it was like real quick and easy. This one definitely was a bigger.
A lot more moving parts.
Moving parts, yeah.
Oh, you had a bigger cast too.
Like that you had to audition people for this. This was a film. You're
we
like,
cast people.
We don't know these people.
We
and
met
we're
people.
Trusting them.
Yeah, through the movie,
right.
Which is terrifying. So scary.
What is the audition process like? Like, what was it like being on the other side? Because you're a trained actor.
Yeah.
And then you're Frey.
That was the most accurate assessment of our duo that I've ever heard.
I guess you've been on, because you've directed a film, which is how you met Frey, actually.
Yeah.
So even, like, what is it like being... Looking at an audition, what are you looking for? What were maybe some of the common mistakes you saw people making in an audition?
That's good.
This isn't general for casting. This is our movie specifically because we look for actors that can improvise, which is very hard and it's not common. And actors that can improvise both in joke form and in the moment and can act, right? So our casting call was, you know, do the sides once as we gave them to you, and then on your second take, make it your own, say whatever you want. But we asked that you keep the scene entrances and the scene exits the same. So we've kind of found that system works really well with shooting improv, that if you keep the beginning and the end of the scene consistent, you can play with that middle area. So that was really that second take for actors was the biggest... telling if they could hang in the movie or not.
Yeah, and if they made like really bold choices.
Yeah.
Because I remember like the guy who plays Rory, Kat's brother in the movie. His name is Gunnar Willis.
He's great.
He's really funny.
Yeah, he's
really
great.
So funny. He's great. And we knew him through some friends and stuff. When we first, the big learning lesson in this movie is like what you write isn't always the best version of the character. And sometimes actors surprise you that you didn't picture them that way or anything. We pictured Rory older. We pictured him just like a different...
Like a bearded, lumberjack kind of woolly guy.
And so Gunnar asked us to audition. And at first I was like, I don't really see it, but sure. And so instead of we gave him a funny scene. And then he chose to pick a dramatic scene from the movie. And then he improvised a 2-minute monologue that's now in the movie.
Whoa.
About his wife and how she got pregnant when she was a kid and all this stuff. He improvised all of that in his audition.
Whoa.
And once we saw that, we were like, holy shit, that guy.
You're the guy.
You're the guy. You're the guy.
Well, also, like, you know, we're working... everyone worked for free. So you have to, every cast member, every crew member worked for free. So we're very, very lucky.
Wow.
But, you know, not everyone is going to jump at a free opportunity to go stay in Gaffney, South Carolina for 8 days. So, like, with us casting, we had to find people not only that were funny, not only could dramatically act, you could believe they were a part of this family,
yeah,
and that they could all be related, and that they're down to take 8 days off of work and like lose money and sacrifice their day jobs to come.
Set up like a camp in Gaffney, South Carolina.
It was like 40 people, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like 60.
Well, by the time we have cast and crew, yeah, 60.
About 60.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you, and what I love about your mission is it is all about doing it yourself and not waiting for anyone. So as a filmmaker, how are you convincing these people or painting the picture for people to be like, yeah, I'll do that for free?
It was easier coming off of Good Hair.
Yeah. Oh,
because, so we started writing this a month after we got Just for Laughs. And so by the time we were crewing up, it was easier to convince people if you're like, oh, these, you know, we had a producer, Andrew Lee, who reached out to a lot of the crew. And if he's like, oh, they just got Kevin Hart, you know, to look at their movie and stuff. That definitely eased that part.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, you know, all the people that worked on our movie, they work year-round on big movie sets. And they don't feel artistically rewarded from it a lot of the times. They get paid, but they don't have any sort of reward. And so they came on board knowing this was a passion project and wanting to, like, leave their stamp on it and be a part of it, I think.
Yeah.
Because we're very collaborative, and we take all and any suggestions. And so we have a very open set. And so I think that helps when you're working for free because you feel like your ideas matter, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, I mean, even the title was an improvised line, right?
Yeah. Well, the title was an improvised line, and it was a suggestion from Mandel. Tevin Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a really good friend of ours.
He's a good friend. And the original title was Family Tradition. Mm-hmm. And we never, it was like a tentative title.
It was a working title,
title, never stuck. And then we were in the car one day with Mandel. And I was like, I just can't figure out the title of this movie. And he was like, what's the name of that dude who dies? And I was like, Pop Pop. He's like, just call it Pop Pop is Dead.
Oh,
and then when we were cutting the movie, turns out we said it in the movie. Someone riffed it. And so it was like, oh, that's perfect. That's the title of the movie.
Oh, that's a sign.
Yeah, it was literally, it was all coincidence. Yeah.
Do you find that a lot in filmmaking, that it's almost being able to just follow the coincidences makes it more of an organic and efficient process?
I say most of our process is coincidences.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we get lucky a lot.
A lot of stuff just lining up and working out. Yeah. Yeah.
I think, because I think... Well, we are so loose and we're still figuring things out so much that we try to see those bumps in the roads as opportunities to find a better solution opposed to something to halt us, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So anytime like, oh, we can't figure out the title, well, we'll find a new
one. We'll find it. We knew we'd find it. Yeah, if you just keep chipping away at it. We probably pitched like 50 titles for this thing.
Right.
And we're like, eventually it'll land.
Yeah.
Were there some really bad ones?
Terrible ones. What were some of the ones we thought of?
I don't know. Remember, we kept trying to put peach in the title.
Yeah.
Everything was peachy.
Yeah, there's
peach beer in the movie.
Oh, you noticed that?
I noticed that.
That was a good catch.
You guys had it out of bingo, too. You had a couple different places.
Yeah. We got sponsored beer.
Yeah, RJ Rockers. Yeah.
It was a sponsor?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're a local South Carolina brewery. Mm-hmm. And they gave us a ton of beer that we just drank the whole time.
Our crew, it turned out, we didn't know until after the shoot that our crew was like partying fucking hard.
Every night.
Every night.
And Frey and I were going home and crying.
We'd go home and just like freak out and break down. What are we doing? Is this working? It turned out they were just all getting fucked up.
And like fucking each other and just having a blast.
Had like a Burning Man. Situation.
It was camp.
Over there. Yeah, it was wild.
It's like Gaffney Fest.
Exactly. Yeah, Gaffney, I mean, they have nothing else to do, you know. They're Gaffney, but.
No, I guess you would know. You're from there.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, we shot in her childhood home. Her, like, actual home.
Your actual childhood?
That's the home I grew up in.
Yeah. Oh, so you're, so, like, it's actually true in the movie, like, how the family kept the house. That actually happened.
Oh, yeah.
In
so my brother owns the house that I grew up in.
Oh.
And so we kicked him out for a week.
Those home videos in the beginning, if you pay attention, you can see the house that we shot in the home videos.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the same room. She's running around outside in the yard. It's the same yard we're at in the movie. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy.
And like the mayor was all on board with you guys. Like, did
the mayor came to set?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he came to set the day we were shooting the peach scene, making fun of the peach looking like a vagina. And then that's when he showed up of all days.
And we really didn't want them to hear that joke. We were nervous.
Did he find it funny?
He's a very old man. He's old.
So he couldn't even hear.
He doesn't know. Yeah. 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 There's no way he's even going to be able to find this podcast that old. But we just didn't want him to think, you know, small towns, you don't want them to think you're making fun of them.
Right.
You know,
and that was the thing we learned on this one. Yeah.
Well, good. Thank you. That was that was something we struggled with the whole writing process, is to make sure that we weren't making fun of, but we were running towards these stereotypes and really embracing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Build a stereotype, because the South has those stereotypes, you know, like the
words. Yeah, we're not saying they don't exist.
Of course.
And then break them down over the course of the movie and humanize it, you know?
So that was something in the writing process. In exploring all ideas, you may almost have to cross the line and then find it. You guys had to find yourself like almost walking the line instead of crossing it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think especially the people that worked on the movie that weren't from the South, a lot of times they would make comments or suggestions or things, and I would get a little defensive because
Kat was like definitely like the person we went to, like, is this okay?
Well, because I'm from there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, does this check out?
And I knew there was no world that this existed that, you know, I couldn't have my family enjoy it and feel like they were being attacked or made fun of.
Yeah, we don't want her family to show up at the screen and be like, what is this? This isn't true to us. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is not like an autobiography of my family, but it is loosely based on my experiences and Frey's experiences in the South. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, we would always try to be hypersensitive. I'm sure that there are moments that, you know, we like, for example, the racism that's mildly mentioned in the movie, you know, we try to do it in a realistic way so that it's not all these people in the South screaming terrible things at one another.
Right. But that's never happened to me.
Because that's never happened to Frey. What has happened is people try to touch his hair. And
they touch my hair constantly.
You know, assuming he knows Dave Chappelle and things
Lenny
like that
Kravitz.
In the movie.
Yeah,
Lenny Kravitz. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's very true.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I mean by, like, not running from those stereotypes, but actually facing them head on, but nuancing them to say these people aren't attacking always. You know, it's a culture mix up a lot. And trying to
meet those cultures in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love your attention to detail. And in researching you, I heard you talking about all the work. You called it book work you put into the script before you even almost started writing the actual script. What was that book work you were referring to?
So we've built this process since doing Good Hair. Because we realized, like, if you just start blank, you just stare at that page and you don't know what the fuck you're putting on there.
Mm-hmm.
So we start with character breakdowns, where it's just like very specific, like how old are they? Where are they from? What are their political
What's
beliefs?
Their relationships like with their father?
What do they like with their mom? What do they like with their dad? Even minor characters, because all of those things inform a person. You know, the reason I act this way is because my dad did this when I was 7. So if you can start building that stuff, you understand your characters.
Then
you start,
how long are those? Like a couple pages? Like how?
They're
like
I think they're 40 questions.
50 questions for each character.
50 questions for each character. And then we do given circumstances, which is like where you break down the world itself.
It's like, what's the social climate like? What's the political climate like? What economically, what is the town like?
Which
how does this
important.
Affect the world that these characters live in, right?
And that's big for stories where your environment is like a character itself. Like this.
And we think that this, the environment is a character itself.
Yeah, Gaffney is a character. So we have to understand the circumstances of that place. So then we do that. And then from there, we start doing timelines where we break down, like, we get a big giant whiteboard and we put a line right down the middle and we break down where every scene goes on the timeline.
So we do like act 1, act 2, act 3.
Yeah.
And
start trying to
plot point 1 that launches you into act 2, plot point 2 that launches you into act 3, that kind of stuff.
And like, even though we're writing comedies, like, we don't talk about jokes or anything throughout this. It's like all just structure.
And the reason for that is because if you focus too much on the jokes at first, then you get really attached to a joke.
Attached to it. You'll keep an entire scene for one dumb line.
That has nothing to do with the plot, right?
Yeah, where it's like, really, your plot.
Or it's not a character-based joke because you haven't developed your character enough yet. So we really try to save punch-ups and joke writing until last, because if not, we get attached to these dumb jokes. you know?
I've heard that on like Daily Show and like the John Oliver Show, is they write the seriousness and the funny comes at the very end.
Yep.
You've got to have the foundation first.
Well, it's like, you know you're funny We do comedy. Right. You know, like, we hire funny people. At some point, someone's going to come in and make this funny. So let's just make sure it works structurally.
This is before you even have dialogue.
No dialogue.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no dialogue. And okay. So we just have the timeline. And then they take the timeline, make that into, like, a document outline.
A beat sheet.
A beat sheet.
So in Final Draft, you can actually look up your beats, and you can put your ideal, like, page numbers for each beat.
That's really
and
important.
And beat shifts.
Yeah.
And that was helpful, too, I think.
Yeah. And then from that, and then you do your first draft based off your outline and your beat sheet. And then that's when you finally start putting that dialogue in there. And then we probably did, like, 10 drafts of this.
I got more than that.
I think more, maybe, like, 15.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we kept rewriting.
And then I would say from our shooting script to what we actually shot, there was probably, like, 60% improvised changes. Not, like, scene structure like we
but
talked
that's
about.
Why you do all that book work is because then we handed that to all of our actors.
What do you call it? The questionnaire?
Character questions, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and we told them, we were like, you don't have to use this. As actors, we, you know, everyone
make
has their
choices,
own process.
Make your choices, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Make your own choices, but this is what we did. Some of them took it and ran with it. I know some actors didn't even look at it, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. But it gives them that place to start building off of.
Yeah, that's part of the homework as an actor, right? In character analysis.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like doing your own character breakdown.
Yeah.
But you know, like we said earlier, I come from an acting background. So for me, like, our process is me, like, talking in character a lot, like all the characters, like a bad woman.
It's literally me at a computer writing, and then Kat just pacing around.
Acting out everything.
It's very bizarre.
To a point where when we, like, started shooting, I felt like I knew every other character except for my character the most, you know?
You spend so much time with, yeah.
But yeah, so I think those kinds of things just help me in my writing process. I don't know if they help our actors. I think it gives them strong characters that they can pick up and add to.
Yeah.
But a lot of them took that, and then some of them took it and took a spin and added their own backstory.
I know Jonathan did that a lot with Nate. Nate's the guy who doesn't talk, you know?
Yeah.
He has a whole backstory for him and, like, a whole, like, inner
you
life.
You would have no idea how in-depth, yeah, his...
I think so Jonathan funny. Did the most character work out of everybody. And he talks, like, once in the movie.
Well, Megan does a lot, too.
Yeah. Megan does a lot of character, like, character work leading up.
It's interesting. You work with different actors. Some of them need a lot of that and need a lot of talking, and then some of them need none of it, and they need, like, short, brisk things. So
yeah.
Some of our actors really want to talk through things and really wanted all of our character questions and things like that, and some of them were like, nah, I got it.
Okay? I'm like, I don't need all that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. We're all trying to get to the same destination.
Yeah.
It's whether you fly in or you run in or you take an Uber. It's like, however you get there,
just get there.
Exactly.
And they all got there.
Yeah.
And so that's what matters. Yeah.
It can be so stressful on a movie set. If you're getting a concussion, it's like, oh no, she got a concussion. It's like, but we only have 8 days, and that's going to push us back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly what happened.
There's a lot of breaking points that can happen on a movie set. And you're together as a couple.
Yeah.
First and foremost, how do you balance that relationship in that? Were there any breaking points in there?
Not on this one.
No.
We didn't fight. We were like, we went in this one like, no matter what, we have to be a team. Because it was, you know, it was a lot of new people, a lot of people we hadn't met. And we were like, no matter what, we
have to be a united front.
We have to be a united front. And if we have disagreements, we talk them out, you know, separately.
We don't fight in front of anyone,
and
you know.
No matter what, yeah. Everyone knows if Kat thinks that, Freight thinks that. And if Freight thinks that, Kat.
Yeah, we can't contradict one another.
We don't ever contradict one another. And so you start learning, like, which battles to lose and which battles to fight over. And, like, when to let your partner kind of take the lead.
Yeah, I think the only time we even argued on set was when I was injured.
Yeah.
And I was so upset.
Because she wanted to keep going, and I told her she had to rest.
Yeah, well, because I didn't want to push back the shoot. I wanted to shoot the fight scene. And
she
wanted to
still shoot a fight scene with a concussion.
She's like, no, your brain is bruised.
Yeah. I was like, we don't have to.
Like, I don't think we can shoot this.
And then we
now.
Got in a series. But no one saw that. And it's funny because
nice.
We just did the Q&A the other day, and one of our actors, Caleb, was like, there was ever any, like, fires to put out? I had no idea. And I was just thinking, oh, my God, the whole thing was flaming the whole time.
Million fires.
There are so many fires. And the fact you say that blows my mind. So cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, as a couple, I think we learned – less even from Good Hair and more from the rollout of Good Hair, of spending like all this time going to shows together, and we're doing these big screenings.
Yeah, we're producing the shows together.
We're producing, you know, the stand-up and the movie screenings, and we did like 10 of them, and like going through that together, going through the Just for Laughs together, you know, not winning Just for Laughs, and like going through that together emotionally. Mm-hmm. All that stuff.
Well, you always get more no's than you do yeses.
Of course. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people see, because we did have success with Good Hair, and now we're rolling out our next movie. Freddie and I felt like it took forever. We thought like people forgot about us, and everyone's like, you guys are already doing that so quickly? And we're like, oh, okay. But, you know, having all those losses in between, like, people don't see that. People only see the wins. Mm-hmm. So people think you're super successful, but the reality of it is we're not that. So we get way more no's, you know?
Yeah. But I think those no's, like, make us stronger as a couple.
Right. Because those people don't believe in you, but you have to believe in you.
We have each other. Yes. And no matter what, we're going to fucking make it happen together.
Yeah. And Good Hair, well, that was based on, you actually did take the last for conditioning.
Yeah, right? That's super true.
All super true.
That's all super true.
So you base a short film on an actual conflict.
Yeah, that was our first
super
real
recipe
fight.
Recipe for another conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it never replaced it. I never got
made a whole movie and everything.
Made a whole movie, still never replaced it. The movie version of me is way better.
He buys the conditioner.
He tried.
The swab. He buys the swab.
Yeah, exactly.
The swab. He tried. Yeah. You know, yeah. I didn't try.
Yeah, I have a friend in LA who just screened. He, instead of going to like grad school, he just took that money and made a feature.
That's cool. So smart.
And was just like, oh, well, this is going to be now this is what I would have spent on college. I'm going to now spend on this film.
I think that's genius.
So he is, he just did like a screening, and I guess you're talking about the rolling out part where you realize, oh, filming a movie, just being on set is 25%. Mm-hmm. It's the color correction, the sound design. There's so many, getting like, even just pitching it, putting mm-hmm. together a
the
trailer.
The press and
like,
yeah.
What is that process like on the end that people don't see?
We've spent, I want to say, 9 months on the post end. We only spent 4 on the
shooting,
other end.
Yeah.
On the writing, shooting, all of that.
All that.
The rest of the 9 months was, this past 9 months have been editing, getting the poster design, getting the press package together, getting the premiere, getting the location. Then you got to start promoting all that stuff.
Cutting the trailer.
Yeah. And we do all that ourselves too. You know, we don't have a giant team. So I'm like, I'm the one who's cutting
the trailer.
We don't
have a budget.
You know, yeah. No. We're the ones who are like ordering all the posters and getting them put up and stuff.
Did you design it too?
No. That was Joe Clark.
Oh, yeah. And Chris Blivens. That's Blivens.
For the credit? The titles?
That was a guy, Nate King.
Nate King.
Stuff?
Yeah, that's super
letters.
Cool.
So good.
Those
yeah.
came out cool, right?
Yeah, it came out great.
We really wanted like a homemade feel for this movie. Because we realized at the end, we're like, oh, this was like a home video almost. Like, because it's made in her hometown and stuff. So we like that felt look. He did a great job.
Yeah, but that's Nate King. We were referred to him.
Yeah, from Adult Swim. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and he's great.
But yeah, the post-production, that's where you start being like, did we make a mistake? Because it's hard to watch.
Oh, yeah.
The first cut of a movie is the worst movie you've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's the worst movie you've ever seen. And you're like,
and you're trying to figure out how to save this movie, or like, where is the movie and all of this shit?
That's the best way to put it. Through post, you're just like, how do we save this? how do we fix this? And that's what you feel like you're doing the whole time.
It's like, how do we turn this into a movie? We shot all this shit.
Yeah.
Now how does it make a movie?
And so, I mean, we, especially with all the improv and all that stuff.
Oh my gosh. That's what you hear is,
yeah.
I mean, improv is awesome and great and fun in the moment.
But then
you hear about in post, it's a nightmare to piece it together.
Dude, don't.
Our editor hates us.
We had to cut, you know, like 2 full scenes just because like the riffing just didn't line up, and it was me and Kat, it was on us.
It's
hard to cut scenes with the riffing, but it always makes it better in the end. It always makes it better, but it just takes longer. I mean, I watched every clip for the movie. It took me 2 weeks.
Well, because you have all these options.
Yeah, 2 full weeks to watch every single shot from the movie.
So it's like, okay, well, let me see it with this joke replaced. Mm-hmm. Let me see it with that joke replaced. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens if the pace changes here and we sit on this shot? So it's a lot of pacing, but it's also a lot of like we have A, B, and C jokes, which is the funniest and which makes the final cut. Mm-hmm. And Frey and I still right now, with the cut we have, we're thinking about swapping out jokes and it's way too late.
Yeah,
and we like are constantly thinking really about bad. That. Yeah.
But we can't swap out. It's
too
late.
It's too late. It drives us insane. Yeah.
Why is it too late?
Because it's in color.
It's in color correction.
Once it's in color,
that's the final step.
You're done, bro. Yeah. You can't touch the movie, and that's so scary. Because you always just want to keep fixing it, keep fixing it.
Yeah, when do you, I mean, even in stand-up, even in the editing, you're like, there's always something. How do you just reckon with the reality?
You book a premiere date on August
29th. And then you're forced to do it.
And then you have to show the fucking movie. Like, literally, that's, for us, that is the only way we get anything done.
Yeah.
Deadlines.
Deadlines.
If you like, if you tell everyone you're going to show a movie in August, you better show that fucking movie.
You better have a movie to show.
You better have a movie to show.
And I guess making the right choices in editing comes down also to just remembering the plot points and like why we're in this scene. And if something may be funny, but it doesn't drive the story, then you have to kill it.
Yeah. That's like, we call it killing your babies. Yeah.
You got to, I'm a big Judd Apatow fan, and he has a line that I always go to, which is less cum, more heart, which is so funny to me, but it's so true. Because there's been so many times where we're watching a scene, and it's like, this is funny, but does it matter?
Yeah. Right.
Does it have emotion? Do I care about the characters? Mm-hmm. Like, is the joke rooted in anything of merit story-wise? If not, it has to go.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And we did that a lot.
Well, and jokes are funnier when they're rooted with purpose, you know? We have a lot of things that I think people are going to laugh at that aren't even necessarily a joke. They're just a very specific character, like, decision and trait. Like, the way some of these, like Madison, who plays Laura, like, she doesn't have a ton of jokes on the page, but the way she delivers them.
Is that I don't want to give anything away. Never mind. But that's her?
That's not who I get. No. That's my sister. My sister character.
Oh, yes.
Like, when she's on the phone during the fight scene.
So funny.
You know, most of those on paper, like, if I said those jokes, they wouldn't be funny. But when she says them.
It's so rooted in
it's so character. Rooted in her character that it's fucking hilarious, you know what I mean?
But she also just, like, all of our actors understood this world.
I agree.
They all got it immediately. So and they get who these people are. Every one of them was like, oh, I have an uncle like this, I have an aunt like this, I have a cousin like this. And so they were able to just ground that in all in character. Yeah.
I found and talking about you're almost laughing at the character, almost not what they're saying, sometimes someone would say something and you would cut to a character and then I would laugh at the reaction of the character. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have to say anything. It's just, aha! Like, just seeing them, like, evokes a laugh. I found very fascinating.
We did that with Nate a lot. I remember when we were cutting the movie, the biggest note was, like, more Nate. Every scene he's in, it was like cut to him more.
Yeah, because Nate's character and Frey's character, because they're both the in-laws of sorts, they're the only outsiders. So they're kind of telling the audience how they should feel.
All those reaction shots, if you think back, they're all Desi and Nate, every single one.
They're all Frey's character and Jonathan's character because everybody else is in the world and this is normal to them in the world. Mm-hmm. But if we don't see them reacting like, what the fuck did they just say? Then we don't know it's weird. And then the audience is like, okay, good, cool. Someone else think that's weird. Right. I can laugh.
Right. That's why you have to do that. And that's a lesson from, like, just cutting the movie over and over.
Over
and over. And over and over.
Yeah. And
what is the filtration process? And a lot of filmmakers can do this where you have a film and you want to get as many notes on as possible, but then you can almost have like analysis paralysis where you send it out to 20 people and then you get all this different feedback and you're like, but I like them, but then they said this, and they fucking that, and
that totally happens.
So, like, do you guys have like a set people you like respect, or have you gone too far? You know what I mean?
We've done both. We've done both. I think more in the writing than the actual cut of the movie. The writing we'll send it to. I remember Good Hair we sent to everybody. And then I realized quickly, you can't send it to everybody.
Well, and that process taught us who gave really good notes,
True. Some people think they just have to critique it just because you're looking for notes.
Right.
And so they point out things that are like, oh, well, that's obvious or whatever. And then some people will, like, rip your script apart in the best way. Where you, when you read their notes, you're like, how did we not think of all of that? We have this author, Carrie Adams, I'm close with. She gives us the best notes. Everything we ever write, we send her notes. And she's
a novelist.
She'll eviscerate our scripts, like front to back. And it's the best thing.
You need that.
You need that. She'll point out every character flaw,
And I think it's funny because, like, as a writer, like, I remember when we finished – because I wrote the final little monologue that's at the end, and I finished the first draft, and I remember being like, this is it.
Like, this is the best thing ever.
I was like, I've done it. Like, this is fucking masterpiece. This is golden. This is beautiful. And then Carrie sent her notes the next day, and I was like, I'm going to quit. This is over.
I'm so bad at writing.
So it's so funny how, like, you go through that process. But you're right. You do get that I like how you said analysis process. I've never heard really that. Good. I totally get that. And we even had, some people who, like I said, weren't from the South and didn't have this big family complex that didn't always get the movie. And I would have to remind myself and Frey, there are people that are really, really going to get this. And people that don't, that's okay. We made this for certain people that understand this.
I remember, when Mike Johns from WAB, when he came to do the Q&A, he was like, I watched the movie last night. I feel like you had a camera on my wife's family. Whoa. And I was like, that's great.
And he felt like Frey's character in the film.
I felt like your character. He was like, I paused it at one point because it was so eerie how similar it was to stuff I've experienced. And then you have other people who watch it and they're like, I don't get any of this. Yeah. This is nothing to me. And you have to just kind of take that.
Yeah, you have to understand, not everyone has to like your movies. That's okay. You don't like everyone else's stuff.
Exactly.
That was hard. We're not making things just for people's approval. We're making things because we have to make them. If they like it, that's even better.
We made this because, we went through a really rough period where Kat's grandmother passed, and that was all we could think about. And so it hit a point where it was like, well, we got to put this into our art somehow.
Yeah, because it was initially about your sister, right? It's going to be about your sister. And then when your grandmother died, you're like, oh, never mind. This is what's
Well,
about.
It was also Gucci Mane.
Gucci Mane.
Gucci Mane.
Yeah.
Was a huge inspiration.
This is real.
A Gucci Mane shirt in
We did.
We're huge fans.
We're huge fans of Gucci.
I'm the East Atlanta Santa.
Yeah, exactly.
Cock and Hammer. Bandanas on car and
tennis.
And so,
Burr. Someone get Gucci Mane to this premiere, please.
So, after Kat's grandmother passed, and we were still trying to figure out the movie, I think I was taking a shit one day. And we have the auto.
It's a common theme in your relationship.
It's a common theme in our
relationship.
It is. Shitting. And I was reading the autobiography of Gucci Mane on the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a chapter about his grandfather and about how his grandfather was a drunk who would fall out in ditches and they'd have to go pick him up and stuff and carry him home. But he was the most important man in Gucci Mane's life. Mm. And how he changed his life. And when his grandfather died, they picked up and they left the town and they never went back. And he thinks about that town and his grandfather to this day all the time. And I was reading that and it was like a lightning bolt. I remember running with my pants still down into the bedroom like, it's the grandfather! The grandfather has to die. and that's kind of what spawned it.
With your pants around your ankles.
Yes.
Yeah, pants around my ankles.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
You just pinched it off and just ran in there?
I just pinched it off, bro. I didn't even wipe. That's how good that idea was. I didn't
ghost
even
wipe.
Well,
we were trying to find motivation for her to come back home, right?
That was a big thing. It was like, what's big enough to have to go? And it felt like sibling, that's not enough. Like, what makes you have to go? You don't have any fucking choice. And it was like, oh,
someone has to die.
The stakes have to be high enough for the audience to care if they know nothing about you. Or your characters, they still have to care as strangers.
And that's the big note in general always is how can we just make these stakes higher and higher and higher and higher and higher? And that's what we, and through editing, through writing, through all of it, was just make it higher.
So for filmmakers that are trying to make an independent film, do you have any concrete tips to maybe help them along, make their process easier?
shoot where you know you can shoot.
Yeah.
You know, your
right,
house.
Well, I would say right to produce.
Right to produce. Yeah.
So write things realistically for the people that you know you can get to come and play with you on a weekend, right? Mm-hmm. And write in areas that you know you can shoot. If you can get your local coffee shop that you hang out at, then write a fucking scene there, right? Mm-hmm. Write to produce.
Don't write like a car crash. Because no. You're going to have to crash cars.
Yeah, a lot of people want to. Yeah. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to write the next big thing, right? Yes. Or to write some sort of masterpiece. But the truth of it is you got to make a lot of stuff. And you got to make a lot of bad stuff before you make anything good. And like Fran and I are still in our bad stuff process. And yes. It's crazy that people don't think it's total shit. But yeah, no, it's great. It's great. But I think a lot of people like, you know, they'll be like, I've been writing this pilot for 4 years about the zombie apocalypse and da da da. And I'm like, simplify it. Write what you know. Mm-hmm. Write what you can do. Write what you can produce. Like strip all down.
The very, very, very initial seed of this of Pop Pop is that was like, where can we film?
Gaffney.
Film in Gaffney. Mm-hmm. It's right store in Gaffney.
Yeah, we wrote to produce.
Like literally, nice. It wasn't like we got to get this big, you know, artistic expression out. And that happened over the course of the story. But the initial idea was just like, where can we shoot?
That's cheap.
For free or cheap and easy. Gaffney doesn't have permits for filming. They don't. There's no system in place.
Yeah, every location.
We were shutting down streets. Yeah. We got sheriffs. We got the whole government helping us out.
That would never happen in Atlanta.
Never. So it's like, but even on Good Hair, you know, we're shooting, you know, where I do comedy at, we're shooting where I work at, we're shooting where we live at. Like, just keep it
realistic.
Realistic.
And don't think you can do it all on your own because you can't. Mm. Really lean on people. I say that meanwhile we like write, direct, and act in the things. But you know, lean on people. Good sound. That's always overlooked.
Actually, fuck everything else we said.
That's the fabric.
Get good sound.
Yeah. Get good sound.
You talk about like on set.
Yes.
So how do you get good sound?
No one invests money.
You have to pay. You have to spend your money and get a decent boom off, you know?
But
there are guys around town that will do it for a couple $100 that'll bring their equipment that are amazing, you know. Lean on
You're all right. Amon Garner.
Introducing.
Amon Garner, the producer of this podcast.
Yay!
That's cool. You got to get on YouTube to see Amon just go into the frame there. That was awesome. Yeah, Amon's dope, dude. He's audio guru over here.
Yeah, he is.
Definitely give him all your money.
All of it.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll do something cool with your sound, too.
And even like, not to just segue off Amon, but what my friend learned in L.A., his movie's called Love Shot, by the way.
Okay.
It's like assassin, but like kind of funny, like kind of like how Barry is. It's funny, but rooted in drama. Like he's
dramedy,
type deal. It's really good. But a lesson he learned is music and how expensive music is. And he has a karaoke scene that he had to fork up. Like that's where he is right now, is trying to figure out what to do with music because he's like, oh, Sony wants $70,000 for that song. Mm-hmm. And even a karaoke version of a song is still in the thousands. It's like, that's something he learned the hard way that I think people should keep in writing to produce as
totally. Well.
Totally.
Well, you know, we have never licensed a song. We've always done our own original music.
Yeah. And this time we have an original soundtrack, which is on Spotify.
Yeah.
Pop is Dead. Check it out.
Check that out.
Made by your childhood boyfriend, right?
Yeah.
You're an amazing researcher.
Jesus.
This whole time I'm like, he really knows us.
Do you know my blood type?
Holy shit.
Well, I know his blood is hemophilia.
Oh, yeah. That is true.
Yeah, that is true. Dabs.
But yeah, to get around the licensing thing, what we've done is like, so while we're writing, this one we knew we wanted country music. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, it's in Gaffney, it has to be country. So we started listening to a lot of folk, country, bluegrass, you know, country rock, twang, like anything in the, like all the different kind of genres.
This is while you're writing
country,
too?
And start making playlists. And as we hear songs we like, and you know, just Spotify radio, you find one song. I like Avett Brothers a lot. We used Avett Brothers a lot as a reference. So we started Avett Brothers radio. Start finding songs that way. We built like 200 songs, and then from there we picked a song for each scene that we thought fit that tone, and then I put a playlist of like 15 songs or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then we sent that to our composer when he came on board, and we're like, use this as a starting point. And then he was able to make something entirely original while still maintaining the essence of these original songs that we like.
So the part of the reason of the original title Family Tradition was that I had my heart set on getting Hank Williams Jr. Family Tradition.
Wow.
For the party scene. But of course we cannot afford that. So
did you look how much they were charging for it?
We didn't even look.
We started to look and realized it was licensed by someone like crazy, and it would have been super expensive.
We realized how difficult the process was going to be.
This is taking up a lot of his post time.
I'm sure all of his budget, too.
Yeah, and budget.
And we were already dealing with, like, SAG stuff and all these union stuff. And we were like, we don't want to get into, like, music rights.
Right to produce.
Yeah, exactly.
Key point.
Yeah. So he made something that I love even more. That is, like, a new family tradition type song.
Old time way of life.
Yeah. And it was perfect. And then once I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, Corey took the script and was writing songs based on the script, too.
Yeah, back when the script was really bad, too.
Oh, so he was writing music based off not even seeing the movie.
Yes.
Right.
Wow. We actually shot some of the movie to his music.
He had already made a couple songs.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Like, we knew this song called Hey Chicken would be used in the bingo scene. Mm-hmm. And so we knew we had to have enough shots for a little quick visual montage.
Because the beat.
We wanted to match the beat. We knew Old Time Way of Life would be playing during the party montage. We knew where most of the music
There
was
were
going.
Some new songs that, and then some songs that we kind of slept on that ended up being way more important in the movie than we thought. Like, we asked Jenna, who is Corey's girlfriend, and she's also a musician and singer on the soundtrack.
She's in the same band, right? Yeah, she's in Susto.
Okay. Uh-huh. And they have their own band called Babe Club. That's just the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Jenna wrote this lullaby for our actress Megan Poole, who plays Katie Rose, the one she's singing while she's rubbing the kids goodnight.
Yeah, yeah.
So she wrote that only for that scene, for that moment, so that we didn't have to license
a
lullaby.
Of course, yeah.
And then the lullaby ended up being like a very important theme of the movie, and the melody of the lullaby comes in and out in places you don't even recognize it. So things like that.
Because we realized, like, oh, that's probably the lullaby that Pop-Pop and Mama would sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where Katie Rose got it. That's why she's singing. So what if that lullaby represents Pop-Pop?
So every time she feels some sort of way, we have that lullaby theme.
That melody coming. It's in the beginning of the movie. It's when we see the peach. It's when you find the picture of Mama. Like, there's very specific points.
Because
we're trying to get you to connect emotionally with that music. And we wouldn't have found that if we weren't trying to get around licensing.
Yeah, exactly.
When I watched Good Hair, because I watched it back and I like voted for you when it was all the Just for Laughs stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'm a fan. And then seeing you guys did, I didn't realize how big a deal music was until very recently going to post with him. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm looking at your Good Hair and then this movie, Pop Pop is Dead, and I'm like, oh, they're geniuses. All original. Music. Just take away the stress.
Yeah, just know what you want. Like Good Hair, I was watching a lot of romantic comedies at the time. And so we were like, let's do all jazz.
Well, it was like Harry Met Sally, when Harry Met Sally, kind of jazzy.
Woody Allen, Annie Hall.
Don't say Woody Allen.
We can't say that.
We can't say Woody Allen. But
we were listening to a lot of like that jazz, like romantic comedy stuff. And so, picked a bunch of songs, sent it to our composer, and then he was able to capture the essence of that music.
Yeah, the trumpet, this is my favorite fact about Good Hair, and you've probably already heard me say it. The trumpet player who plays the trumpet in Good Hair was Amy Winehouse's trumpet player.
Whoa.
Isn't that pretty cool?
She's very proud of that. She's a very
Because he was over in the UK, so he lived next door to him or something crazy.
Yeah.
I know.
Fancy.
But that's the only cool thing.
Good Hair also got a lot of festival notoriety and things like that. What do you attribute to that? How were you able to tackle that world?
That one's hard to explain because on paper, we have the worst movie for a film festival.
And let's explain why.
It's 24 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're programming a film festival and you're doing short films, if you have five really good 5-minute short films, or you have one okay 25-minute short film, you're gonna pick the five because you wanna pack as much possible.
Mm. And that's, you know, more filmmakers, that's
more
clout.
There's more filmmakers, right, more clout, more people come to your festival. So by choosing a 25-minute movie, you're basically saying, I'm going to reject all these other shorter films, yeah, to screen your film. So you better be really fucking good to earn your spot in this,
right,
festival.
Well, you have to be better than those other five filmmakers.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, we did decent, better than, yeah, we thought we would.
Initially, we had people tell us, like, you're probably not going to.
Yeah, everyone was like, there's no way. There's no way.
We got that from a lot of people. Like, there's no way.
But we, Ted Kendrick, who is our producer on Good Hair, he's amazing. And what he does and is going to do for this film is reaches out to festivals and asks for a fee waiver and sends them some information about us.
I would recommend that to all.
That's first-time filmmakers. People don't know this, yeah, but every single festival has a fee waiver.
Now, they won't always give it out.
No.
You know, and sometimes...
And they might only give you a discount code to submit.
I would say
submit.
About 40% we got waivers on. But it saved our budget. Because, I mean, that's the thing. No one saves money for film festival budgets either. And then you get around the film festivals, they're all like $50, $100. And before you know it, you're spending almost $1,000.
Submitting to just 10 fests.
For a long shot.
Just for, right, a long shot of, right, submitting. And so that's how you can kind of game that part of the system, is reach out for these waivers.
And really go to your... And if you get into these local festivals especially, really going and making relationships with those people. Like next weekend, this weekend, we're going back to the Macon Film Festival, mm-hmm, just because.
Yeah,
because they love us and they want us back and, yeah, they want to host us. And, yeah, so, you know, a lot of those connections carry over. And then when you make your next movie, then that's another festival, hopefully your movie gets into. So that's kind of what we did. But the bigger festivals we got into were absolute shocks to us.
Yes.
And really don't know why or how we got into them.
We got into LA Comedy Festival. That
we got into the Heartland Film Festival, which is Academy qualifying.
Yeah, that's
And we were so poor at the time, we couldn't afford a DCP package.
Which is press, like, or like a...
It's not a press thing. Yeah. It's basically everything you need to know about your movie digitally to play it and or sell it or distribute, yeah, it.
Behind the scenes videos. You know,
if you're making a movie and you want to get into like the bigger festivals, you should have a DCP package.
And it's expensive.
What all is in that package?
It's basically like all the sound information, all of like the projector aspect ratios you need.
Basically, you could take that DCP and like make a Blu-ray that you could sell.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, that's how much info is on that.
Like everything about the movie, what it was shot on, you know, everything like that, digitally about the film.
And so once you get to these bigger festivals, that's
they require it.
And Heartland helped us. And
they paid for our DCP package for us.
Yeah, whoa. That's the thing. You can work with these festivals. Once they want to support you, you just have to reach out. And that was the biggest thing we learned.
And we're like, hey, guys, we can't afford to go. And honestly, we can't afford for this DCP package. So I guess you can't screen our movie. And they were like, no, we'll pay for your DCP package. And let us know if you can make it out. And of course, we couldn't. But that's amazing. The fact that they did that, and you know, big shout out to them for like, supporting local filmmakers. But you don't get a lot of support, even if you win the festivals, you don't get a lot of money. You're still paying your bill to get out there most of the time.
Yes.
You're still buying your flight, you're buying your hotel, you know, you're getting out there, and you've paid to submit most of the time, unless you've gotten a fee waiver.
You just ask, you never know if you can ask,
just ask.
Right? Just always ask, find those programmers of
also,
those festivals.
You're gonna, like, we met our initial crew for Pop Pop at a film festival.
At Macon, where we're going back this weekend. Yeah, shout out to Macon.
Another coincidence, right?
Yeah. Well, and we already Andrew Lee's our producer. I already knew him. We had worked together. We had PA'd on America's Got Talent together years ago. And he had a film that was screening, and then we had Good Hair, and our films just kept getting all the same festivals, and they would screen together all
in Georgia.
Time. In Georgia. So they were always screening together. And then at Macon Film Festival, we saw them, and we hung out the whole weekend, and by the end of it, we were like, we should make something together.
I'm like, you guys had a good movie. We had an okay movie. Let's make a decent movie.
And so that's the big thing from festivals. It's like you get that connection.
Yes. Yeah. Just like a stand-up comedy festival.
Exactly.
It's a networking more than anything.
It's more about the networking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so just try to do it. Try to find a way to game it where you can save some money, because it is really, really beneficial.
Yeah. It's a big topic we've been touching on. But you got it. You need money.
Yeah.
And Good Hair, you did crowdfunding, right?
Yeah.
Is that how you funded that entire movie?
We had some investors, and we also put up some money.
We put up personal funds, and we had one private investor.
$7,000.
Seven?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very cheap.
That's very cheap.
Yeah.
Your tamale, yeah. Good hair did.
Yes.
Yeah, good hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then for Pop-Pop?
Our shooting budget was 15.
15. Okay. And then, but I think once it's all said and done, it'll be around 20, 25.
Okay, great. Yeah. And what did you do any crowdfunding on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we weren't successful either time at crowdfunding.
We're not good at
so we wouldn't be like the people to talk to about how to successfully crowdfund.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, what has worked in our favor is a lot of people. Oh, this is dangerous too. This is FYI for upcoming filmmakers. A lot of people, if they think you have potential and talent, will come out of the woodworks that have money. But sometimes those people have your best interest in mind, and sometimes they don't. Mm. So we've had to say no to a lot of offers of investors,
yeah.
But we also have said yes to some, and that's what's gotten us this film. Is
we've learned how to jump at every money opportunity.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, before we were so gullible and poor that, like, people would be like, I have money. I want to buy good hair for $500,000. We're like, what? Okay. Like, do it, you know? But those people aren't always, you know, the industry is just weird and sleazy, and you have to be careful.
Yeah.
And, you know, Frey and I realized, oh, we might actually be something because all these people want to invest in us.
That's
so,
amazing.
Yeah, so that might mean something.
I think this one we probably put up a good bit of money.
Yeah, we put 50% of the budget was raised by us personally.
You, okay.
We were lucky enough to book some good acting gigs and book some stuff that all that money could just go into this movie.
Yeah, strange yeah.
Scooby-Doo.
Miss NCIS over
NCIS
here.
NCIS over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how were you able to, so you were able to fund some of it. So what are some tips for getting investors?
Funds.
Yeah, funds.
Have a great pitch package.
Okay.
Do a lot of research about that.
Do a lot of research into sponsorships and pitching to producers. You want to sell them not just on the movie, but on you as a creative, as a filmmaker, because they want to make sure, am I giving this money to a person who will see this through? Even more than just it being good or anything. It's like, do you have the determination to make this a reality?
Well, and I would say in regards to sponsorship, that's kind of a whole different world. Figuring out the angle of how their brand aligns with your brand.
That's a big one.
Like, yeah. You know, you can get free lunch donated on set. You just have to call all the right people, and you have to have the right 30-second pitch, which is, you know, your brand aligns with our brand. Why? We're making a family movie. It's also local. You're a local business. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to support more local business? The cast and crew will take a photo with your banner and your thing, and we'll put you on a social media. Two tickets to the premiere. There. Don't you want to feed us?
What can they get from you? What do they get out of it? No one does anything to be nice.
Right.
You know, so if you're trying to attract investors, what are they looking for that you can tap into with your film?
Because with film, there's not a promise of a return of investment.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the riskiest investment you could ever do. So what are you looking? Because obviously, you're probably not looking to get all your money back.
So what are you looking for?
What are you looking for?
And most
of
the time, people are looking for clout. And like with us, they want to be associated with the brand. They want to be associated with us. They want to be a producer on our next movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all we really have right now, you know? So yeah, I think just being very smart about how you ask for money and not just like, don't you believe in me and my passion?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be more than that. You know, how can we scratch each other's backs here?
Yeah.
You've got money. I've got ideas. How can we make this work?
Yeah.
Are you almost, some of these investors, are you almost cold calling them or?
No, it's usually the best investors you're going to find it through personal connections.
Yeah.
Okay,
you know,
just organically.
Organically, you know.
But sponsors you can cold call.
Sponsors definitely cold call. But yeah, the investors, it's a little harder. You definitely got to be in a position where people are reaching out, I would say.
Guys, so you're almost just keep your eyes open for investors. And when you hear an opportunity, just strike on that opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always money is always
the money stuff, dude.
Discussion.
Yeah, and with this movie, we're way deeper in it than we were last time, and so a lot more money talks and a lot more budget talks, and the premiere is its own, you know, a whole other budget thing. And, you know, so it's,
do you have a lot of sponsors at the premiere
too? We have
17.
It's incredible.
We have 17 sponsors. Yeah.
And that was all. Were you just cold calling a lot of these people, or
well
some of them
local too, I guess. Yeah,
they're local.
Yeah, local, and then we have a PR firm that came on, Abelita Burns Public Relations.
Yeah.
And so they came on, and then they started getting sponsors like crazy. Mm. You know, we have like Laughing Skull, we have People Store, we have.
And those are Frey and our, like, our personal connection. That's our agent that we're with.
But then we have stuff like Popcorn World. And
because Pop Pop is dead, and it's a movie premiere.
We got a popcorn, you know? Yeah, we thought
But that's how we align with their brand. You know?
You gotta find the angle. You know, how do we. Orpheus Brewing is one of them. You know, they support local art and stuff. And so that was the thing that they really wanted to come out and support.
And they're all from a small town in the South.
From small towns. So that was a big connection. The dude, our connection at Orpheus, he said he only clicked on our email because he called his grandpa Pop Pop. And so he saw that.
That's the only reason.
Well, I got to see what that is. And then now they're a sponsor for the premiere.
They're giving free beer to the
VIP. So you always got to find that personal connection and angle. That was a coincidence. His grandpa's Pop Pop.
What is in the title? What is in the, before they even open the email, are you wording the title of the emails or the subject line?
Oh, yeah. So press releases are very hard and something we've learned a lot about, done a lot of research about. And in fact, we had a phone conversation with a publicist this morning giving us more advice on how we fucked everything up. So
we have 17 sponsors, but how
everything's terrible.
But you
want that catchy tagline that's customized to them, and you don't want to send them a general email.
Make it as specific
and personal. If you're sending out like mass emails to people, they're not going to respond to you. And think about it from your perspective. Mm-hmm. If you just got a random ass press release, you're like, I don't care anything about this. So identify that personal connection and put it in the subject. The first body of the email, and then whatever it is that you're selling, put in the subject line. So I think right now for the premiere, what is it?
Atlanta's biggest premiere for Atlanta's hottest duo or something like that.
I don't know.
Something that's just like, just doesn't give you a ton of information, but enough information that you're like, okay, well, what is this?
Oh, like Atlanta and it's a couple.
Yeah. That's all you need to know. Yeah.
And it's a premiere. Yeah.
We've learned, like, just trim it down.
Shorter the better.
What are we? We're an interracial couple that makes cute movies. Mm-hmm. So let's just own that, you know, and don't make it any more complex than that.
Well, what can people expect from the screening on August 29th at Buckhead Theater?
A lot. What a good plug.
So we like variety shows. We like experiences, and we think if you have a full experience, it's going to affect your feelings about the film.
Mm-hmm.
And our brand. And so what we're doing is we have stand-up, we have the film screening, and we have live music from the original soundtrack.
Oh, that's cool.
To close the night out. Uh-huh. Yeah, and so the whole band will be there and they're performing.
But if you get VIP tickets, then you get access to the red carpet. You get all that free stuff we were just talking about, free beer, free wine, free food.
Free clothes,
$100 worth of swag from Meet Me on Peachtree, our sponsor. They're a really cool local Atlanta brand.
Yeah, super
awesome. And then a VIP pre-show from some of like Atlanta's best improvisers, and Mia Jackson is going to do 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If y'all don't know Mia, she's a killer.
Yeah, she's been on here twice.
Yeah.
She's on tour with like Amy Schumer.
Yeah,
right
she's
now.
I know. She's stopping tour to do our show.
Wow.
And I don't know why. She's doing that.
She's a
saint. So amazing.
Yeah.
People like her. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the pre-show, and then you get like reserved balcony seating and all that stuff.
Yeah, really, really nice. So
But yeah, I mean the goal is that, you know, like we have Lace Larrabee and Jared Harris as our comedians on the main show.
We're a married couple,
They're both from the South. And you know,
we're
like everything about the show is like trying to build off the movie into a bigger experience. You know, if you're watching 20 minutes of comedy, you're gonna laugh harder. If you hear the music live from the movie you just saw, you're gonna connect with that music even more. Mm-hmm. It really deepens the experience, I think.
Are you doing a Q&A?
No. We were gonna do it. I think they kill the mood, man.
Yeah, we went back and forth, and we wanted to be more of like a party.
We wanted a fun. That's why we did music and stand-up and stuff.
Well, that's why we shot the Q&A ahead of time. So
we shot one, and that's what we're releasing online and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because we were like, we're not famous.
Also, you do a lot of Q&As at like festivals and stuff, and we really want to design this night for everyone to come, get drunk, have fun, watch the movie, dance and sing to music, and then you're gone.
Yeah.
We don't want anything like to, like we've been to Q&As. We went to Kevin Hart's Q&A of our movie, and people were walking out, and it was Kevin Hart on stage.
Yeah.
So why are they going to stay for us?
Yeah.
You know?
I just saw, when I was in L.A., I saw BlacKkKlansman.
Oh, cool.
And they did it before the movie.
So, really?
Yeah,
they had like Spike Lee in the cast up there, and they did like a 10-minute Q&A before the movie.
Yeah.
Just to almost just to add context for what people are about to see, mm-hmm. you know?
That's cool.
That's
yeah.
really cool.
I'd never really seen it done before. Which
I've
I
never
found
seen that either.
I've always seen it after, you're right.
Yeah, so I found that interesting.
Because usually it's a talk back, yeah.
Exactly.
But the thing is, too, is like, but that's Spike Lee. Like, everyone's so excited to see Spike Lee.
Well, if they're coming to your premiere, they're probably excited to see
you. I think
you.
We don't look at ourselves like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a big deal.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
People care about you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we just want to keep that fun. We're all about the fun.
Yeah, and the pace of the evening. Mm-hmm. So, because, like, the comedy gets you going. You're going to be sitting still with the movie for, like, an hour.
Yeah.
And then by the time you, like, refresh your drinks, you're going to, like, dance for 30 minutes of music and then go home, you know?
Okay. We just want to hit all the senses, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, if you change your mind, you need a moderator.
Hey. Oh, this was all a pitch.
That's what it was. Got
I
it.
I get it.
Hi, brother.
Fontas water on there.
Yeah.
That's super funny.
It's like, he saved it till the end.
Yeah, right.
If you need one.
Well, it didn't hit me until I saw Black Klansman. I was like, oh, well, before could be interesting. But
Yeah,
I've never even considered it being done before. That's amazing.
Yeah. Initially, we were going to do one.
Yeah, we were going to do one, but then we were afraid people would leave and then not see
the
music.
Kevin Hart thing freaked us out when we saw
people walking out of Kevin Hart, and we're like,
"Well, we ain't cooler than Kevin Hart, that's for sure."
You can think more highly of yourselves. People are willing to pay for a ticket to come.
People paid for Kevin Hart.
Yeah, the movie's over. I just
Yeah, I don't know.
But I guess before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
I think
a lot here.
Yeah, there's a lot of.
We've covered a lot of information.
We have so much. What do I want the world to know?
I mean, what was the? I guess the point of this was for like young future filmmakers or indie filmmakers. Yeah, I think like what you said earlier is always ask. Don't assume. That people won't help you, and don't assume people will help you. Mm-hmm. Always ask, and people are more willing than you think. And you know, don't put so much pressure on it being perfect the first time. You know.
Yeah.
That's all I got advice-wise.
It's good. Almost finishing is better than perfecting.
Yeah.
Just totally.
Completing it is.
I mean, how many people do you know that their projects just sit in post-production for like 2 years and it never finishes?
I have a film sitting that I made when I was 19 that I've never finished or released. You know, like,
unbelievable.
You know, just finish it.
Just finish it.
Just finish it.
You'll make more things.
And then even if it's not good, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It really doesn't matter. You know, we all die. Who cares?
Yeah.
Things are low.
Just finish your movie.
Yeah.
You know.
The world's going to end either way. No one's going to remember you and your movie. No one.
Hey, that's
like,
the
this
truth.
This is for young filmmakers, right? Nobody.
No
cares.
One cares.
Nobody cares.
But that's the best freeing part.
It frees it up.
Is
yeah.
No one cares. So do whatever the fuck you want. Go have fun. Go make.
The point is, take
want.
The pressure off yourself.
Take the pressure
you know.
Off. It doesn't matter. Just go make whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And go. Where can people get tickets and all that?
So they
jazz?
Can go to popopisdead.com.
Okay.
And tickets are available there, as well as the trailer and
yep.
all that fun stuff.
Poster you can find. You can find information about the performers. We're on social media at Koki Productions. That's C-O-K-I. And Koki, I guess
he's
we should
dog.
Get him in the
he's
video.
Been great.
Yeah, he's been really
he's
quiet.
Been quiet this whole time.
He's a little Pomeranian. He's a little white Pomeranian.
He makes a cameo in Good Hair.
He does. That was his first acting gig.
Yeah, he was making that.
Great.
It was good acting on his part.
He's actually high on pain medicine right now.
Yeah,
he had
up.
Mouth surgery yesterday.
We're all sick, all three of us right now.
We're falling apart.
We're falling apart.
But come to our movie.
I'm on so much Sudafed right now. It's crazy.
Well, you did great.
Thank you.
You guys did great for being so high. Congratulations.
No, that's dope. I love hearing that.
When you get away with it.
Yeah, when you get away with it.
People can't
you're
tell.
You're really good at being high.
It's almost like a game you play. I'm going to get high and then
and
be
then
sociable.
See if I can be a person.
See who notices.
Does anyone notice I'm fucked up? Yeah. Wait, do you have any, so
yeah,
is that your
like
advice?
Koki Productions on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Oh, Koki
Productions on social media, C-O-K-I.
Yeah, and check out Good Hair on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you personally, Also, I mean, you're a stand-up and you're an actor as well.
Yeah.
So, like, where are your personal information people can get at?
Oh, too? I'm at Catherine D. Holly on Instagram, Catherine with a C.
And I'm Frey Ford, FrayForde on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we book anything else, you'll find out that way.
Yeah. Check out Daphne and Velma. It's
what you were in, right?
I was in that. Yeah. I just like making people watch it. I just like when they watch it.
It's a Scooby-Doo movie without Scooby-Doo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo movie without Scooby-Doo.
The biggest letdown.
Or any fun. So if you like that, go see that.
It's a credit.
Yeah, it's a credit. Yeah.
It's a paycheck. It paid for this movie.
Daphne and Velma paid for Pop Pop is Dead.
Well, then that's all that really matters.
So I'm thinking, when watch the credits. Because in the thank yous, you're going to see Daphne and Velma.
Boom.
Because they are the ones to thank for this.
Well, thank you guys for being on Hot Bread.
Thank
you.
It's
been
a long
time
coming.
Thanks for having us. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. We out of here.
Hot Breath. Yo. I hope you were taking notes on that. I want to make a movie now. The fact that they did that with that budget and what they have accomplished. Seriously, if you see this movie, when you go to their premiere on August 29th, you're going to be blown away at what they're able to accomplish. Truly inspirational. This episode was truly informational. My favorite part was probably hearing about the festival process and how you can actually, what all you need to submit to a festival, but then also the fact you can like waive fees. Just ask, people. Just ask. You never know. So that was my favorite part. What was your favorite part? I mean, there's so many in here about the creative process of making a movie. So I would love, love, love to keep this conversation going online. Our social media is Hot Breath Pod on Facebook. On Instagram, I post daily little clips of these on at Hot Breath Pod on Instagram. I'm also on YouTube. So when my engineer, Amon Garner, butted in to make sure you guys know that he makes music and also has his own podcast network and also produces podcasts and also does video. Watch the YouTube. You can see the face with the name because I shout him out on all of these and it couldn't be done without him. So definitely, if you're in need of any of those services, hit him up, Amon Garner, on Facebook or a new website, boldkoi.com, boldkoi.com. You can reach out to him there as well and see his podcast network and all the services he offers. So definitely hit that up. And like I said in the intro, now you know, if you found this valuable, we spend hours on each of these researching and producing and finishing. So if you enjoy it, an iTunes review goes a long way, or even just telling someone. We're a creative community here at Hot Breath, and with your help, we can keep that community growing. So thank you so much for all that you do, Hot Brethren and Sister. And thank you to Fontus Water as well. I don't know if I shouted them out in the episode, but they keep our custom water labels. You can see those on the video version as well. Catherine and Frey were very impressed. But long story short, go to the premiere. I'll be there representing Hot Breath. There'll be a lot of people there. Be a part of this movement. This is really the second movie of many that this couple's going to make. I believe in these kids. So keep supporting the podcast and local art, and I think that's really it. I think we can now land this plane. You know, I end this episode's over 140 now. You hear me thanking the one and only Erin Byers. She composed this theme song, so I always have to thank her. If you are interested, by the way, BT Dubs, in starting your own podcast, I actually just created an online podcasting course. You can go to udemy.com/how-to-start-a-podcast. I created a 2-hour crash course on everything I've learned doing in 3 years of doing a podcast. I cram into 2 hours for you to just learn it all in one place. So I can't tell you the impact having a podcast has had on my, not only my career, but just my personal business network and just personal life and comedy life. So it's worth it. So anyway, I also teach a stand-up class if you're interested in that, if you like stand-up comedy and writing and all that jazz. But we just out here trying to help the peeps. So however I can do that, joelbyerscomedy.com. You can also see my schedule. I host a live podcast every Wednesday at Java Monkey in Decatur, Georgia, where comedians are performing. And then I interview them as well, Hot Breath Radio Hour. So we're just growing here, peeps. And it's with your help that this is possible. So shout out to you, Hot Brethren and Sisterin. Shout out to my wife one more time for helping out A shout out to the shout outs for all the shout outs. All right. I think we've done enough here. Keep listening. Every Monday, we're posting new ones. We're going to keep rolling out new content on Hot Breath. The Hot Breath Radio Hour is going to start coming out on Fridays. And stay tuned. We got some good stuff in the works. So until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath.
This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.